Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Damage Report. God damn, we got a lot of stuff today. This is going to be a packed show. Very often, this is sort of inside baseball, I guess. We have five big topics for the majority of the show that we're going to talk about, and we'd never really get to the fifth one. We're definitely not getting to all of it today. But joining us to not get to all of it, J.R. Jackson is in the studio.
I'm here to make sure we get to three of them.
Okay,
we're not going to get to four. Watch.
So here are some of the things we're going to be talking about. Absolutely gigantic topics. Here's a little thing. The president might have been implicated in hundreds of millions of dollars of tax evasion.
We'll get to that one.
And that's kind of a big story, I guess.
That one we'll go with. Okay.
We'll do that one. Okay. Then there's the latest on Kavanaugh, including a letter that I guess pokes even more holes in his depiction of himself as a weights lifting, church going service guy, just has friends that are girls sort of guy.
That one's interesting enough. Yes, we're going to that one too.
Okay, we will. Donald Trump finally makes clear what he really thinks about Christine Blasey Ford. That's exciting.
Absolutely.
Who should we really be worried for in the wake of the Brett Kavanaugh, Christine Blasey Ford scandal? Who are the true victims in America? We'll be talking about that.
That's number four, so maybe not.
Maybe not. We also have an ad. So Medicare for All is a thing that now people are talking about. People are campaigning based on it, and people are campaigning against it. We have an ad that is one of the most disingenuous depictions of how Medicare for All would play out in the real world that I think I've ever seen. But also, in just a little bit, we're going to be joined by Lori Wallach, who's going to be talking about the new NAFTA 2.0 that Donald Trump's very proud of. What has actually changed? What's good? What's bad? She'll be joining us to break it down.
I love it.
So why don't we start off with a little bit of Donald Trump. Bombshell New York Times report, Donald Trump might not be the self-made man he's been pitching himself as for the past few decades for a number of different reasons. First of all, and this is amazing, by age three, Donald Trump was earning $200,000 a year in today's dollars from his father's business empire. Age three. I don't even think, thanks to child labor laws, I don't even think he was working that many hours. He was a millionaire by age eight, a self-made eight-year-old millionaire. By the time he was 17, he was given this gigantic apartment building to manage. And what's interesting is that after he graduated from college, he started making more and more in this sort of salary and salary equivalent, $1 million a year. Even into his 40s and 50s, his father was transferring $5 million a year to him. So look, it is possible that Donald Trump was just that good of a businessman that he should be paid $5 million a year in today's dollars. But you see there that what he has been willing to admit so far is that he was given a small loan, $1 million at one point he was given. No, when he was a baby, when he was a toddler, long before he learned to read and write, if he ever indeed did learn to read and write, he was making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And that's just the beginning. So let's start there, JR.
Right.
I think this was talked about a little bit on the main show yesterday.
I think so.
Are you surprised to find out that his depiction of his business upbringing and success, his bootstrap story, as we call it, might not be all that he says it is?
No, I'm not. But this is the thing. It's weird. It's all about perceptions of people, right? So a lot of times people perceive, they get mad at Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid and guys in the NFL who have been kneeling for rights and standing up for things, the people who protest, and they call them spoiled. They call them rich, spoiled athletes that don't do anything but just catch a football, shoot a basketball, you know, whatever sport, insert there, they're mad at. Swinging a tennis racket, can't believe he's Serena Williams. So they call them spoiled, rich, and entitled. When they actually worked their ass off to get to where they are from birth and maybe came from backgrounds that didn't give them $2 million at age eight at age two? I don't know which one it is.
At age three, he was making $200,000. He's a millionaire by age eight. Probably because of wise investments.
But folks that were given stuff like that and never had any skill to back up what they were doing, never actually practiced anything, never actually learned anything, to even, fine, you get an inheritance, but to even have an opportunity to sustain that and build off of it, never had the skill to do it the right way, we praise those people. But the people who actually worked from the bottom and got to where they are and then have something to say, we tell them you're rich and spoiled and you don't deserve what you've done with your life.
They didn't do it the way
it's the backwards approach to our life. So it's hard to even get mad at this guy for acting like a petulant child, because since he was a petulant child, we've supported his ability to continue to be a petulant child.
Yeah.
And everything he does, everything he says, he gets away with, and we support him in it.
Yeah.
No one gets, there's no consequence ever given. Why isn't anyone going to learn to stop doing something?
Well, so look, this is obviously amazing, and I agree with you. We have this really weird way of looking at wealth and who is deserving of respect, who is not. What's interesting is that all of this stuff, you know, the fact that he's been lying about himself the entire time. He says he got $1 million, turns out he got somebody like $400 million. So there's a slight difference there. That's not the important part of this story, though, at the end of the day. The end of the day is the potential illegal acts that were committed, tax evasion and things like that, that he was apparently a part of for year after year after year after year. Because what they wanted to do was that Donald Trump's father had all of this money from his gigantic business empire, and he wanted an understandable thing. He wanted to give it to his kids. But the thing is, we have laws in this country. We have tax laws. And if you do those sorts of transfers, either while you're alive or once you die, either way, it's going to be taxed because it's money that's going from one person to another person. Mm-hmm. But they didn't want to deal with that. They didn't want to put up with those taxes and lose so much money. It doesn't matter if he ends up with $400 million. They want more than that, always more. And so that's when the breaking the law ended up happening, or at least activities that seem like they're worthy of investigation for possible tax fraud. He apparently helped his parents dodge taxes in a number of different ways. We can't go into extreme detail. The New York Times report is many pages long, and you should read it. It's a fabulous bit of reporting. We're going to summarize a few of the greatest hits from it. He and his siblings set up a sham corporation to disguise millions of dollars in gifts from their parents. Basically, the way this worked was they own all of these apartment buildings, his father does. They need to buy things for them. The example, one of the big examples given is boilers. You need to buy boilers for the apartments. So you can take your money and buy a boiler that costs $10,000, or Donald Trump and his siblings can set up a corporation, buy the boiler, charge you $50,000 for it, and then effectively have just made $40,000 for absolutely nothing. They didn't do any additional work. They didn't make the boiler. The boiler does not cost $50,000, but it's a great way to transfer money over. And if you do that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, then you can avoid paying hundreds of millions of dollars worth of gift taxes over time. So it's pretty clever.
Yeah, and then while you're doing it, you have to wonder, what is their concern for the residents? If the objective is to make sure you make money off of the backs of these apartment complexes, whatever buildings you own, or whatever maintenance and things you're supposed to do with it, that's an indication of how much you actually care about upkeeping the building and actually satisfying your customers that are paying you. Also rent. Crazy how that part comes in.
Yeah, I don't think anyone doubts that they're probably shortchanging the actual people living there as much as possible. But this sort of behavior continued right up until the death of the father a couple decades ago. He helped formulate a strategy, Donald Trump, to undervalue his parents' real estate holdings by hundreds of millions of dollars on tax returns. Of course, reducing the tax bill, and those properties were transferred to him and his siblings. And so what they were basically doing was, when he was going to die and they were going to gain control of it, those apartments are valued at a certain amount. They drastically undervalued them. Then I believe over the next decade sold those buildings, which they said were worth about $40 million. They sold them for 16 times as much, not because they were that much more valuable after 16 years. They were always that valuable. They just didn't want to pay the taxes for it when it came time to transfer the wealth from one generation to another.
I mean, organized crime. It's not like there's no plan behind it. There's a concerted effort to do it a certain way, and they pulled it off. Also, think about this. We could find out maybe we have some indication of what it is that they did, and actually Trump has done in the past few years, decade maybe. So tax returns we never got a hold of while he was running for president, and that he dodged for the whole campaign about submitting his tax returns. And this is another indication as to why. Mm-hmm. What else is in there outside of the stuff where people are talking about Russia and maybe influences here and money laundering and money exchanging hands here and there with his tax returns, but just his business practices? He never wants it exposed because of things like this.
Yeah.
And again, we've allowed him to get away with it. We've said, oh, we fought him long enough on this. Oh, well, that's over. Have we talked about it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, the thing is, with some of these things, the belief is that they happened long enough ago that the statute of limitations might have hit. You can't actually get him for this sort of thing. That's possible. But you're right. With his taxes, why is he so worried about us getting hold of those? Do you think that he participated in decades of tax evasion, and then around 2004, he's like, I'm good. I don't need to do it anymore. If he was willing to have, he had all this money transferred from his parents to him and his siblings. Well, he's got kids now. You don't think they're doing anything shady? You don't think that Don Jr.'s buying some boilers at marked up rates? Of course they don't want access to that information, because that sort of criminality would not be past the statute of limitations. They could still investigate that. The exciting thing, of course, is that if the Democrats actually get control of the House in this election, they can apparently get those taxes. We'll see if they actually do.
They won't.
They probably won't, but they could at least, and that is something. So again, nearly $500 million in tax evasion. Big story for today. We'll forget about it tomorrow, because that's just the way this works. One of the biggest possibly criminal conspiracies in presidential history. Let's forget about it. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna forget about it. We're gonna have Lori Wallach on. She's gonna be breaking down this newly passed second version of NAFTA. Is there anything good in it, and how much has actually changed?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump has what he is calling NAFTA 2.0. He's very unhappy with NAFTA for a very long time, thinks it's a terrible deal, horribly bargained or negotiated. He's got a new version, okay, and he's very excited about that. But a lot of the details are, you know, they're above my head. So we're bringing on an expert. This is Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, who's going to help us break down this new version of NAFTA. Lori, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Glad to have you here. So look, he's very excited about this. It's the United States, Mexico, Canada agreement. First of all, I have read that much of his rhetoric around this new deal sort of exaggerates how different it is from the one before. In your view, which is obviously a more expert view, how significant of a change is this from the prior version of NAFTA?
Well, this isn't a transformative replacement of the entire corporate rigged US trade agreement model that got initially hatched with NAFTA in the 1990s. There are some big changes. There are some big changes that reflect longstanding demands by progressives and unions. And there are some big changes that would actually make it worse. So it's going in both directions. I would say it's a work in progress. There's some things that aren't yet done to the and degree. And it's fairly different, but it's not a wholesale rip it up and chuck it out. I think it's fair to call it something like NAFTA 2.0 versus just rebrand it with a new name, which, you know, it's certainly different, but it's, you know, it's not a new planet.
So why don't we begin to break it down? Is there anything in this new deal so far that we know of the details that American workers should look forward to that actually benefits them in comparison to the old regime?
Yes. So the investor protections and those outrageous corporate investor state tribunals, where investors could basically skirt domestic laws and courts and in front of a tribunal of three corporate attorneys attack any domestic law or government action claiming it violated their expansive investor rights under NAFTA, and then get unlimited compensation from us taxpayers, that is whacked. So the investor rules that promote outsourcing are just altogether gone. And then those tribunals between the US and Canada are gone. There's a 3-year phase in, but after that it's gone, which is big deal. that would get rid of 92% of the entire U.S. liability under NAFTA, under that system. And most of the horrible rulings have been U.S. corporations attacking Canadian energy, water, timber policies. So that's good. With respect to Mexico, it's rolled way back so that the really expansive no right to regulate rules are gone. You could still in Mexico get compensation if the government actually takes your property after following some different procedures and rules. So that's good. So less incentives to outsource. Also, there are some improved labor standards. The problem is they're not yet subject to swift and certain enforcement. There's a stunning annex in the labor chapter that would, for the first time, require Mexico's government to change its labor laws to allow the workers in the plants to actually approve their contracts. Hmm. Right now, Mexico has a plague of fake protection unions. That's part of the reason why wages there are down relative to how bad they were at NAFTA, which was bad. And this annex would require the government to replace all those fake contracts in 4 years with real union contracts, with secret ballot votes by the workers being represented. There are, for the first time ever, rules that would require for 40% of autos and auto parts and 45% of the value of trucks would have to be produced by workers making $16 an hour or more to get the NAFTA benefits. And then there's this really outrageous anti-conservation policy that was in the old NAFTA that's gotten whacked that used to force countries to export their water, their oil, their gas, even if they wanted to conserve. If they started exporting, they couldn't stop. So those are the good news things. It's not just for workers, it's for people and the planet, but those are improvements. Now, just to be clear, the labor stuff with the Mexico labor rights and some other improvements to the labor chapter, unless there is more seriously improved enforcement, then that chapter will not stop U.S. companies from continuing to outsource jobs, dump their toxins in Mexico, and bring the products back here after paying people in Mexico despicable wages. So that's work in progress right there.
Okay, and honestly surprising to me that there was any concern whatsoever for their labor contracts. You mentioned the 4 year period where they have to replace them with something more substantive, but you're saying it's going to come down to enforcement. How likely is it that if in 4 years it turns out that things are nothing better, are we going to scrap the entire deal, or is it more likely that they'll just say, oh well?
Well, here's the deal about that, which is why I say this is a work in progress. And if folks care about any of this, now is the time to get engaged, because the vote won't happen in Congress until at least February, end of February 2019. So there's still a lot that can change. And so the big push is to get new language in the legislation that would implement the deal. So they can sign this deal at the end of November, but it doesn't mean, it's not worth the paper it's written on unless Congress approves it. Yeah. It can't go into effect. So there's a lot of leverage with Congress. So the implementing legislation could establish new rights and abilities, ways for those standards to be enforceable directly. And actually, the labor unions in Mexico have been working with their counterparts in the U.S., and the U.S. unions have been working with the only decent cabinet member in the entire administration, a guy named Robert Lighthizer, who's the U.S. trade representative, to try and create some creative ways that enforcement could be made more meaningful. And we'll see. We'll have to wait and see what the whole final package is. Now, I don't want to make this sound too great, because that's important. Those are important changes. Those are important. Those would be real improvements if that stuff's made enforceable. It could make a difference in stopping NAFTA's ongoing damage. We've already seen 1 million jobs certified, U.S. jobs certified as lost to NAFTA, and the outsourcing continues every week. Mm-hmm. So this is damage that is ongoing that has to be stopped. But there's stuff in there that makes it worse.
And what would be examples of that?
The worst of the worst is just an incredible bunch of giveaways to big pharmaceutical firms. So there are all kinds of new monopoly rights, yes, in a free trade agreement, more monopoly rights that would shield big pharma from competition. So no generic drugs for longer periods of time.
Oh God.
And one of the most egregious things is a 10-year exclusivity period on biologic drugs, which would really screw things up in Mexico and Canada, but lock us in place too. And that's an area where those drugs cost $100,000 a year per patient. Wow. So there's been a huge push in Congress to try and limit that monopoly protection here, and instead it's locked in and exported to Mexico and Canada. And there's some other really obnoxious things like that for the pharmaceutical companies that would let them have longer monopolies. There is stuff that, and that language came from the TPP, and there is stuff from the TPP that would limit regulation in e-commerce, that could undermine our privacy, that stuff that like is new rights and protections for the big platforms to be able to not give government regulators access to the algorithms they use, which, you know, get to issues of discrimination and anti-competitive behavior. There are rules in there that extend copyrights so that the content industry has more rights and powers. There's language in there that just sort of the usual outrageous trade agreement garbage that limits product safety and food safety inspections. And I mean, it's a trend of all of our past trade agreements through Democrats and Republicans have been miserable. So that stuff is not fixed. There is even one really cynical thing, which is Donald Trump, Mr. Buy American, Hire American, left the waiver to Buy American in the NAFTA. Before NAFTA, if the government bought goods or services, they had to, since FDR, have preferences for domestic made goods. And that kept your tax dollars getting reinvested into your communities. So under NAFTA, suddenly there's a waiver. So stuff made in Mexico or Canada counts as Buy American. So shocker, General Electric and the big three automakers and all these guys who get gazillions in government contracts move production to Mexico. They make a big margin of profit, take our tax dollars, pay people $1.50 an hour wage to work just as hard. Yeah. As their U.S. counterpart was making $25 an hour to do and just walk the whole way laughing to the bank. That provision is not reversed, and that was a key demand. So that's super cynical.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, maybe in the near future, though, we can hope to see MAGA hats made in Mexico instead of China. That'd be a nice change. Well, Lori, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I do want to have you back on to talk a little bit more about the negatives. And also, depending on who ends up gaining control of Congress in November, that will, of course, help to determine what ends up with this bill. So hopefully we can reconnect and talk a little bit more then.
That'd be great. If people want to dig into the details, we are literally just about to post an analysis of the whole damn 500-page text, and it's going to be posted at tradewatch.org. That's www.tradewatch.org. Highlights, lowlights, work to be done.
Awesome. Thank you, Lori. Lori Walk, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Thank you so much. Welcome back to The Damage Report, everybody. John Arola, Jared Jackson in studio. Why don't we turn now to Kavanaugh and the investigation. Apparently, the FBI investigation into Brett Kavanaugh and the allegations, primarily from Christine Blasey Ford, it seems like that's what they're focusing on, the investigation. They did interview Deborah Ramirez. She put out a statement, or her lawyers did at the very least, saying that she had talked with the FBI. Now, Julie Swetnick probably will never get to talk to the FBI because Donald Trump didn't want the investigation to include that. I believe Senator Collins said that she thinks that that should be a part of the investigation. We'll see if she does anything to actually make that happen. But what's interesting is that the FBI apparently might wrap up their investigation even faster than the one-week time limit they were given. And you might say, you know, considering how many allegations there are, how could they possibly do that? Well, they found a few novel ways to save time. They're not interviewing a bunch of people, including peripheral figures in this like Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh. What is going on? Really? Christine Blasey Ford's lawyers say that the FBI has an investigator. They're not responding to comments. They're not talking to Kavanaugh either. What is this investigation?
Why take so long? Why take a week to talk to the people who were directly potentially involved in this whole thing? Why would you do such a thing? So again, the whole time that the Democrats were requesting the FBI get involved, and then Kavanaugh, I'm not sure if Grassley said as well, but Kavanaugh and Lindsey Graham, all of them are saying it doesn't matter anyway if the FBI gets involved because we're not going to let them get involved. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what ended up happening. So it's, I don't know, man. It's to do it in broad daylight, basically, and not even try and cover up the fact that you're keeping the FBI from doing FBI work. I'm not sure if we're going to accept it, but we will. That's the only way you can get away with it is if we accept it.
Yeah, or if enough people accept it. But obviously, we're going to be pissed off. Yeah, but what will that actually count for in the end? And look, I mean, the thing is, no matter how ridiculous the Republicans' approach to this is. When they didn't want to bring in Mark Judge to the actual testimony, when Kavanaugh's ranting and raving and crying and all that, they're going to find an excuse for everything. And so when it comes out that the two main people involved in this are not being questioned by the FBI, I've already seen comments from right-wingers saying, well, they already did their testimony before the Senate. Isn't that enough? In the same way that they said originally that Mark Judge's six-sentence statement, the letter that he sent in, was enough. Why do you need FBI investigators to actually ask them questions face to face and ask follow-up questions and, you know, try to like see if they're telling the truth or not? Of course you need that stuff, but the people who don't want any investigation, never wanted it, are going to pretend that this is sufficient. Because it's sufficient for their purposes, not for the investigation's purposes.
There's no need to talk to anyone about it because, and I'm not sure if you've even heard this, but Orrin Hatch was one of them that released a letter that was sent to him by some guy who said he dated Julie Swetnick, and apparently she was into group sex when they were in high school, and therefore, what? By the way, cherry-picked pieces of this letter that it was sent to them from some guy who was an egomaniac, but talked about how she was into all this stuff. So what's the objective here? Mm-hmm. To say, oh man, she's a whore? Or to say, oh, she participated in this all this group sex, but she wanted it? What are we saying? So you are involving Julie Swetnick in your own derogatory way, mm-hmm. but you're not. You don't even want to include the primary accusations from Christine Blasey Ford.
Yeah. Well, look. Do they want the FBI to go to talk to the guy that sent the letter? Of course they don't. No. They wanted to. They want to muddy the waters. They want you to make you think. Well, you know what Julie Swetnick said was really bad, but now I'm sort of hearing that people say that she's lying. And that is honestly as far as most people will go into most of these stories. Like Christine Blasey Ford, yeah, I heard she was really credible, but then I heard there was something about a polygraph and I don't know, they say she doesn't know how she got home. Who can really say? The goal of so much political activity and rhetoric is based on getting a person to say who can really say. Mm-hmm. Because if who can really say, then we just continue along with the status quo. And the status quo is going to put Judge Kavanaugh onto the Supreme
Court. You go with whoever you originally support. If you can't come up with an answer that's going to change your mind, mm-hmm. or if you just plug ears long enough to not get that answer, then you'll stick with what you went with in the first place.
So look, one of the things that we've been talking about ever since the testimony is credibility. Is Kavanaugh credible? Is Judge Ford credible? And we know from the very beginning, even before we knew about these sexual assault accusations, that Kavanaugh had a very particular idea of himself that he wants you to believe is true. And that is a person that does not drink to excess, does not black out. If he Ralphs, it's because of ketchup on spaghetti and stuff like that. Unfortunately, more documentation from the 80s have come out. Not calendars, don't worry, but we do have a letter that he sent. If we could bring this up, you'll see. I don't expect you to be able to read that necessarily. But this is a letter he sent in advance of 1983 Beach Week. You know, the thing that generated the Beach Week Ralph Club, which again has to do with spaghettis. So he's giving some warnings to his fellow bros, you know, Twiggy and Squee and Mickey Joe and all of them. And he said that whoever arrives first at the condo they're going to be doing this Beach Week at should, quote, warn the neighbors that we're loud, obnoxious drunks with prolific pukers among us, advise them to go about 30 miles. Now look, he doesn't explicitly say there that he is a prolific puker and that he blacks out and, oh, by the way, I sexually assaulted Christine Blasey Ford. But again, the idea that this is a guy who just, he likes just lifting weights with Timmy and he has an occasional beer. He likes beer, you know, fine craft brews. Doesn't really fit with a guy that is trying to set up some sort of rager on the beach.
I mean, okay, again, this goes to his character, his personality, who he is. So again, if people say, oh man, weren't you a kid at one point? Didn't you go to parties? Sure. Sure we did. But then this leads to the next part. It's a timeline of who you are and the things you've denied that who you say you are. If you can admit it, you're gonna ask me, JR, did you go to parties in college? I'd say yes. And not go, no, I went to the campus church and I prayed that my math test would be easy.
Yeah.
Like you can't play both sides and be a choir boy and then also be this party rage that we keep seeing that you keep denying.
Yeah, and similar with the drinking, if you're going to say, I was a virgin until really late, I was never interested in anything sexual, I only wanted female friends, okay, well then maybe you wouldn't include in your letter, I think we are unanimous that any girls we can beg to stay there are welcomed with open dot, 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 dot. As was pointed out in the office, four dots is suspicious. Very suspicious. And then he later on says, the danger of eviction is great, and that would suck because of the money, and because this week has big potential, and then in parentheses, interpret as wish. Okay, well, you've left it to us so many decades later, we have to interpret as wish, and I interpret that you're hoping to get drunk and get laid. Which, look, if you're being honest about it, that's fine. but you have presented yourself as a person who never drinks to excess and thinks of women only as partners to go to church with, and maybe some of them lift weight with Timmy too. I don't know, but that's what you have presented and said that this is a he said, she said. Credibility is all that counts, but your credibility gets worse with literally every day that passes and every bit of paper that surfaces from the early 80s. Anyway, we have to take a short break. When we come back, Donald Trump is the most honest and open about what he thinks about Christine Blasey Ford. Had a rally last night, and we've got some video for you. Welcome back, everyone. So up until this point, Donald Trump has been pretty restrained when it comes to Christine Blasey Ford. He hasn't really talked much about her. Certainly, he's defended Brett Kavanaugh, but when he talks about her, he's been, I would say, respectful, even for him.
He even called her credible.
He did. So after her testimony, he said that she seemed credible and all of that. And then a few more days went by, and he had a rally last night in Mississippi, and he decided to talk about her. And bear in mind, it's a Trump rally, so this is how it looked.
What he's going through, 36 years ago, this happened. I had one beer. How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Upstairs, downstairs, where was it? I don't know. But I had one beer. That's the only thing I remember. And a man's life is in tatters. A man's life is shattered. His wife is shattered. His daughters, who are beautiful, incredible young kids. They destroy people. They want to destroy people. These are really evil people.
Really evil people. Okay, so again, remember how defensive they were when they were called deplorables? Now these are really evil people. Destroy. His life is in tatters. He might get on the Supreme Court next week. Life is in tatters. He's destroyed. His daughter's life is in tatters. Okay, that's one way of looking at it. So what you had there was Donald Trump, who is, because of the way we are as a people, the most powerful person in the entire world right now, going up and using as applause lines mocking statements about, at the very least, alleged survivor of sexual violence. And his fans love it, because of course they do. I want to play one more video. This is just an excerpt from it that zooms in a little bit. Don't look at Donald Trump's face. Look at the other faces around him.
I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. What neighborhood was it in? I don't know. Where's the house?
That's Trump's movement. A bunch of old white men laughing. She says she was attempted rape, but it doesn't remember all the details. He does this. He does that.
As if
one of the guys in the crowd.
It's straight out of a
elbows him.
It's straight out of a parody of what you would expect really bad guys to be. Ironically, who he calls evil. Like, don't you know?
She doesn't remember incredibly specific details that don't have anything directly to do with her trauma. She only remembers the hand being put over her mouth and the two guys laughing at her pain.
Now, even after this, if you take exit interviews from some of those people that were in that crowd and start asking them, hey, so details of what Christine Blasey Ford said in her testimony, did she forget if it was upstairs or downstairs? They go, yeah, she totally forgot if it was upstairs or downstairs. If they say, hey, did she forget the number of people there were? Yeah, she totally forgot the number of people that were there. Mm-hmm. Because my president just told me that she forgot all that stuff, first of all.
Well, he even says, like, the clearest illustration of what you're saying there, he says, she said it happened 36 years ago, and then how many years ago did it happen? I don't remember. But you just said it was 36. We all know that she says it was 36 years ago. If in mocking her, you have to make up things that she wasn't sure about, maybe you don't have that much of a case.
Absolutely.
And we zoomed in, obviously, on the guys there because it's the most disgusting, at least directly. There were a lot of women in the crowd there, too. Not all of them were smiling, not all of them were clapping, but there was at least one woman enthusiastically holding up a woman for Trump sign. Yeah, this is why women don't come forward. I'm glad to be a part of this.
Were any of the guys given women for Trump signs to hold up? No. This is all a very concerted effort to make you think, or you, if you're dumb enough, to think a certain way and watch that scene and go, hey, you know what? These are the guys that I want to be supportive of.
Look, he said it, so I guess I'm as bad as him when I say this. This is an evil movement. This is their strike back against Me Too, these goddamn uppity women and their demands for respect. And look at all of these people taking them seriously. It just makes us sick. And this is how they're going to try to fight back. They initially tried to do it with Roy Moore. That became somewhat untenable eventually. But they think they have it here. They think that if they can destroy this woman, then maybe things haven't changed so much. Maybe I don't have to be scared so much of the way things are moving.
It's the discomfort has come because some people are finally within the certain group of the powerful people who've always honestly, who've always been able to get away with whatever they want. Now they're like, oh my God, just yesterday, Trump was about to get on the plane to go to another, I think the Tennessee rally or the day before. And he goes, this is a scary time for young men in America.
Yeah, we're gonna play a little bit of that in just a little bit. Now, other people were watching, senators. Jeff Flake says, there's no time and no place for remarks like that. To discuss something as sensitive at a political rally is just not right. It's just not right. I wish he hadn't done it. It's kind of appalling.
Sort of. It was only kind of appalling.
Who knows?
I'm sorry.
Jeff. What that means when it comes time to vote.
Yeah, I'm nitpicking, but Jeff, you gotta come stronger than that.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham said everything he said there was factual. Wasn't, we already demonstrated that, but Lindsey Graham is all in, his chips are in the middle. Susan Collins said the president's comments were just plain wrong. And Angus King, who I think we still expect is going to vote in support of him, it seems like at this point, says, I watched it two or three times, it made me feel sort of sick. I don't understand why he felt he had to do that. To turn around and turn her powerful testimony into a political rally punchline, I don't know what to say. I'm glad that they're all disgusted by this, but the commentary to the effect of, I don't know why.
I can tell you
why. You don't know why? You still don't know why?
Maybe you can ask a couple of aides. Hey, walk outside and start asking people. Angus, if you want the answer, it was Angus King that said this, right?
The last
Angus, if you don't know, go outside, ask a few women. Ask anyone who isn't at that rally and say, why would President Trump say such a thing? Mm-hmm. I'm perplexed. Or are you saying, I don't know, just you can have nothing to say in the statement when someone asks you, hey, Angus, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let me say, I don't know.
You should know. Obviously, I mean, there's multiple explanations, certainly, but you should know all of them. One, because he's an inherently cruel person who delights in attacking people if it causes others to laugh in support of him. And two, because it advances his agenda of discrediting women who say that powerful men raped them. Because he has been accused by at least four times as many women as Brett Kavanaugh has at this point. Anyway, you brought up another quote of his. Why don't we come to this? This is after the rally. I believe this might have been this morning. Not 100% sure. Might be this morning. But he was asked, you know, who should we be worried about in this? What's the real concern with all that's going on, as you will see?
It's a very scary situation where you're guilty until proven innocent. My whole life I've heard you're innocent until proven guilty. But now you're guilty until proven innocent. That is a very, very difficult standard. Well, I say that it's a very scary time for young men in America when you can be guilty of something that you may not be guilty of. This is a very difficult time.
It's a difficult time right now for the folks who never had to deal with false accusations, being murdered, being convicted, put on death row. Central Park Five, maybe, Emmett Till for being murdered by random ass racists in the country for supposedly whistling at a white woman, which, by the way, if he did, because that's the death penalty. It's a scary time in America because people that look like me that I relate to have to actually answer and have consequences for their actions. Folks who've since the beginning of this country had been put under a microscope for things they didn't do just because of who they are. It wasn't a scary time for them. Donald Trump was part of that group of people. It's a direct reaction. He took out the full page ad. Everyone knows about the Central Park Five ad, so I'm not getting the details of it, of how we need to bring back the death penalty, protect the police. This is the same guy from 1989 who went after these kids. And actually, after it all happened, and they were exonerated because of DNA evidence, it doesn't matter. While he was running for president, he did the same thing. It doesn't matter to him anymore because who cares about them? They're not human. If it's a rich old white man, hey, it's a scary time for us. Or if it was a younger rich young white guy, it's a scary time for him because he might have to actually deal with the consequences of his actions.
Yeah. Yeah, he still says they're guilty. DNA evidence exonerating them doesn't matter. Guilty until never. I mean, that always guilty. But yeah, scary time for men. One of my grad school professors quote retweeted that saying, yeah, it's getting really scary. They might have to start walking to their cars with their keys in their hands. We'll be back with more. Welcome back, everyone. So, Medicare for All, one of the most talked about policies, you know, both in terms of what effect it could have on the country if we were to institute it, but also who is going to run on it? Who is going to run against it? Well, we've got a little preview of what the Republicans are going to do to fight against this new push for Medicare for All. They've got an ad out. So there's a candidate, Torres Small, congressional candidate, Democrat. This is an ad targeting her. Take a look.
Hello, we need to see Dr. Miller right away. Yes, let me just grab my insurance card.
Under the health care plan Xochitl Torres Small supports, employer-based health coverage would be eliminated.
What do you mean you don't take that anymore? But it's through my work.
Forcing everyone into a massive government-run system.
So we can't see Dr. Miller today?
Putting Washington bureaucrats in charge.
It'll be okay.
Xochitl Torres Small takes from us to give it all to Washington. NRCC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That doesn't make any sense at all. What are they talking about? So if Medicare for All happens, you won't find out about it. You will be blindsided when your little girl is judging you from underneath her blanket because you can't see a doctor. They can't see a doctor, but there's Medicare for All. They have insurance. No, they lost their employer, but it's through my job. And I'm just finding out about this now. I haven't turned on the TV in a year or two since this was clearly debated and put into law. What is this ad supposed to even mean? I want your commentary, but I want you to bear one additional thing in mind. The candidate they're attacking with this ad, there's no evidence that she even supports Medicare for All. She supports the ACA. So it's not only a ridiculous, disingenuous attack against Medicare for All, but this isn't even one of the people pushing for it.
But the opponent's name is not Mary Smith.
Mm-hmm.
It's a scary name. I'm nervous. Where's she from? What's that name mean?
Yeah.
She must want Medicare for none, because that's actually what Medicare for All is. It's Medicare for no one. Number two, I have the traditional insurance, you know, through your work and everything, and
mm-hmm.
I have made those phone calls. My wife has made those phone calls about our kid, about her, about going to the doctor, about procedures she already had done, or a visit and tests and all that stuff. To be like, oh yeah, I'm feeling a little sick. What's wrong? I got this checked out. You know what happened? You call the traditional insurance companies that make loads of money off of our backs and give us very little. And they said, you know, I don't know. I don't know how that really works. No lie. The insurance company on the phone after being, the best part about that ad, made up thing, about this horrible experience this lady had, she got to talk to someone. You know what happens with insurance? You're on hold for 3 hours. Then when you talk to someone, they go, I don't know. You got to talk to your doctor about it. And you talk to your doctor about it. Your doctor goes, you got to talk to your insurance company about it. And you actually don't talk to anyone about it, but you do get a bill that says you owe about $895. Mm-hmm. And you go, what did I do wrong? You had insurance. Yeah. I was like, so what are we paying for again? The confusion comes with actually having insurance. And the people that are supposed to clear it up for you don't have the answers.
Well, and
at least that evil
person
on the side of her phone in that ad was like, yeah, F you.
Well, it wasn't even clear there if she's talking to an insurer or to a doctor. I got news for you. The ad that would actually happen if we had Medicare for All would be relatively boring. It would be a shot of a woman walking her kid into a doctor's office because you just go to the doctor. You don't have to call and say, hey, do you take my insurance? Because they do take your insurance because it's all the insurance that there is. They're being forced into a massive government program, Medicare. Say Medicare. That's what it is, and people seem to like it. It works pretty well, relatively simple, certainly compared to the ridiculous bureaucratic nightmare that you have sketched out. But this is, I think, a great preview for you. If you support Medicare for All, as we do, this is how they're going to attack it. It's a massive government program. Don't say Medicare, because that's going to scare people off. You're going to lose your current plan. Yes, obviously. Your current plan is terrible, overpriced, probably doesn't cover all sorts of different stuff, and is extremely complicated. This is the same sort of tactic they used against the ACA. They're going to roll out many of the same arguments. And also, hold on to your butts. If we get it passed, we're going to have to fight to protect it for years, if not decades. The same as with the ACA, the same as hell with Roe v. Wade. When we have these massive changes, we do not then get to just drop our guard. We, and indeed even our kids, are going to live their lives, their political lives, stopping challenges against these laws and changes in the Supreme Court, both in terms of bills, in terms of future Supreme Court decisions. We're going to have to worry about who gets on the Supreme Court that might try to get rid of Medicare for All. There's people trying to get rid of socialized medicine in the UK, even though it's still incredibly popular. The right has continued to try to destroy it. So, buckle up. That's what we're going to have to look forward to.
You know what
to.
Happened last year? My insurance changed without my authorization. Mm-hmm. Do you know that happens?
Is that because of Torres Small?
No, but this thing, you know, they said your insurance is going to change. You're not going to know what's going to happen. You know what happened? I got a notification that said, if you don't read through all these different lists of things that's going to change on your insurance, you either have to say no or yes or maybe. But whatever it is, you don't know what's going to change. That's what actually happens. All of the projection that they have of all these horrible things that are happening with Medicare for All actually already happens to you when you're paying hundreds of dollars a month for your insurance on top of whatever you have to pay once you go to the doctor.
Well, and that's what makes this attack very weak, because the idea is everything's okay, don't let them change it. But everybody watching that ad knows things are not okay and desperately need change. JR, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Thank you for watching. We'll be back tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.